If you're trying to make any kind of meaningful, effective change in your life, you've come to the right place.
Good day, ladies and gents. Welcome to another episode of We're Talking Shift. I'm Lori Bischoff. Today, my guest is Larry Fole. Wrestling fans really know him better as Lex Luger, the Total Package. He was a professional wrestler for 15 years, at the top of his game. But from the outside, Lex's life looked pretty phenomenal in every way. Right? He seemed to have it all. He was a superstar traveling the world. He had the physique of a comic book superhero, wife, kids, fame, fortune, kind of the world in his hands, is so it seemed. But for many, fame and fortune can be a double-edged sword, and Lex was no exception. He went from being at the top of his game, I guess you could say, to rock bottom. I'll let him talk more about that. But probably in more ways than one. A lot of people never recover from the kind of lifestyle that Lex was living and the tragedies that resulted. So today we're going to talk about the double life that he lived as a wrestling superstar, the life-altering events that happened, and the shift that ultimately saved him. And I think by the end of this episode that you'll be taking away a lot of insights that will also help you make some positive life-altering shifts. So let's get after it. Welcome to the show, Lex.
Thanks, Lori. Glad to be here.
I'm glad to have you here. It's been a while.
It has been.
Yeah. So for those of in my audience that aren't familiar, we go way back. So our husbands worked together for many years in the wrestling business. And I used to work out regularly at Lex's gym in Atlanta when we lived there. He and Sting had a gym called the Main Event, and spent a lot of hours in that gym. And those are some really good memories. I loved going there and training and seeing a lot of good faces, and it was a fun time. It was a really fun time. You have come, you've done a 180 in your life since I knew you back in those days. And, I was listening to an interview that you did. I don't recall the gentleman's name, but when I was doing a little bit of homework here just to prepare for our interview today, for our conversation, and I heard the gentleman, he said that you nearly shared the same fate as Narcissus, the figure from Greek mythology, who was so impossibly handsome that he fell in love with his own image reflected in a pool of water. And even the lovely nymph Echo could not manage to tempt him from his self-absorption. So that is who he compared you to. And I was like, do you feel like that's accurate? Or was?
Not too far off. No doubt, Lori. I was definitely, had some narcissistic tendencies back then for sure. Very self, I would call very focused on myself, me, myself, and I, for sure.
Yeah. Self-absorbed, right? That's fair enough.
Absolutely.
And I think we all go through phases of that in our lives, you know, and that can either grow into something that can be obviously very damaging, destructive, or it can evolve into something more like self-love and self-appreciation. But before you got there, it seems like, you had to go down a really bumpy path to to get there.
No doubt.
So I was thinking, I mean, there's so much here. I thought it would be kind of interesting to start with you just giving like a super brief synopsis of your story. And then I want to circle back and kind of dive into the details and a little bit of the timeline. So like, for instance, let's just say that you were going to give a movie producer a 60-second elevator pitch for your story about your life, about, you know, the really meaningful parts here. How would you give him that synopsis? You have 60 seconds on an elevator.
Right. My life for the first 47 years was definitely a real roller coaster ride. I always thought it was a rise to the top. I was raised a very strong work ethic, which was good. And I became absolutely fanatical and driven to be the very best that I could be mentally and physically. Read every self-help book, Spent hours in the gym every day honing my physical aspects of my development, and it led to a lot of success. But I really didn't feel, I always felt like something was missing. I felt like I had no real foundation. I always felt like there had to be something more in my life. And it wasn't until my life completely came apart at the seams where I didn't see any way out. A lot of people, like you said, call it rock bottom or the end of your rope, where I found what was missing, and which for me was my spiritual life, my faith in God. And I was supernaturally rescued, is the only way I can put it in this elevator version. And my life has never been the same since. I was forgiven. I was redeemed. I was loved on by a lot of people who never gave up on me and mentored me and poured into my life and made the connection with not my physical aspects of my life, my emotional mind, will, and emotions, and my spiritual side, and brought it all together to apply to my everyday life. And that's kind of where I'm at now. And I'm thankfully in a wonderful place, in spite of having a spinal cord injury and losing 100 pounds of body weight, muscle wise. I can't pump the heart at the gym anymore, but I have found that his power works best in my weakness, so to speak. And I kind of, there's a song called Jesus Take the Wheel. I was able to, which was very difficult for me because I was a real control freak. I feel like I don't have to be in charge anymore. I can trust him with driving the car. So, and I'm along for the ride. And so it's been a wonderful journey since April 23rd of 06 when that happened.
Yeah. So, when you just mentioned about what you lost as far as your physical abilities, you lost weight, you lost your ability to, push a lot of iron in the gym, all of the stuff that, you were so good at, and so driven and so committed to. You also lost important people in your life.
No doubt.
Really important people. So, okay, before we get into that, looking back now, because it's been a while, do you recognize now what should have been warning signs along the way that you were getting really kind of lost and off balance, and things were maybe going in a direction that was not a good direction? Do you recognize now that there were signs that you just didn't recognize at the time?
Oh my gosh, yeah. I ignored every red light, every caution sign without doubt. I was a full speed guy, warp speed. Like I said earlier, very driven, very ambitious. I always rationalized or justified what really I was addicted to success and physical, being as physically perfect as I could be the gym. But once again, I was never, people said, God, you must have felt incredible. I always felt I had to look better. So there was, when I read your book, Lori, I was fascinated because when we try to fill our life with money or fame or physical perfection, or we can get addicted to almost anything, mine included, ended up when all those other things, fame and fortune and glamour and money and a beautiful family, a wife, and you get out, when I felt there's got to be more, I turned to some really negative ways of exploring that with drugs and alcohol. But I would never admit that I could be addicted to anything. I was too disciplined. A lot of people told me, well, Lex, I thought you'd be the last person to ever get addicted to drugs and alcohol. Well, I never thought I was until I was.
Yeah, but when you think about it, your nature, just from, from what I do know about you and just being around in the business that you were in, obviously related to that, your nature and in the way you're describing it too, is you seem to be almost like 100% obsessed with whatever it is you're into at the time, whatever is important to you or you're into or that lights you up. Good or bad, you're into it 100%, right? And so those are, when you have that kind of nature, that kind of personality, if it's directed at something good and positive, awesome. But if that's those same, you know, characteristics are directed to something that's things that are self-destructive or negative anyway, then you're going to go all the way in that direction too, just like you would the other way, right?
I couldn't have said it better myself, Lori, without a doubt. And I always made excuses with the drugs. Oh, my body's getting kind of beat up, so I take some painkillers and I can stop anytime I want. I used to actually stop when things went really bad towards the end of the late 90s, early 2000s. I used to stop and I'd leave alcohol out and bottles of pills that I was taking, actually abusing at the time. And I'd go like a week or a month without touching them, just to see, just to prove to myself and anybody said they thought I was had an issue, I wanted to let them know and myself that, oh, I have control of this. So I used to play little games like that, which really, really wasn't shifting away from it. I was just, I was going to show I could do it for a little while. Then I'd go back because I had a attitude that, hey, it's my body. It's my life. Yeah. As we both know, no, it's not. What we just do affects other people close to us in our life, our families, our friends, everybody around us, our colleagues at work. It affects everybody. There's always collateral damage when you're not making good choices. But I was so, once again, focused on me, myself, and I said, well, it's my body. I can do what I want with it. And I now realize that, no, our bodies and our minds, everything is a gift from God, and it's not mine. And I'm supposed to be a good caretaker of it. And obviously,
steward.
Yes, absolutely. So doing those kind of things was actually not what I was designed to do. And it obviously led down some really bad paths, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So one of those paths was, as you've already said, you know, you were way overdoing drugs and pills and, you know, all of that stuff. I'm guessing steroids at the time as well.
Yeah.
Common.
I mean, not justifying at all. Very common. And my background with football and pro wrestling at that time. Yeah.
Yeah, because that's right. You were doing football before you even got into, for what, like 15 years or a long time, right?
Yeah,
before
high school, wrestling? College, and pro combined 15, then I wrestled 15. So about 30 years of my prime athletic career, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. So that's always been, you've always been an athlete. That's always been something that obviously you've, you know, honed your skill and your crafts, but you had, you know, an innate gift there as well. And then you just took it all the way. And it's, isn't it crazy now when you think about it, and you could look back at pictures of yourself from when you were in your prime and go, how could I have thought that I needed to somehow make this better, that this wasn't good enough? It's crazy, how distorted your vision of yourself and your opinion of yourself is, right? When you're in that mode.
Lori, exactly. Very well put. I actually, when I had my spinal cord injury, back in the end of 07, early 08, I literally had to be bathed, fed, clothed. They used to pick me up out of bed in the morning for therapy, one of those Hoyer lifts like Peter Pan, into my power wheelchair. And for the first year of therapy, I lost literally about 100 pounds of muscle. And in the first few months, it's like being in a body cast. It wasn't just that you couldn't work out anymore. You're like, when you're paralyzed from the neck down and a quadriplegic, it's like you're literally in a body cast. I don't know if anybody's ever had their arm in a cast, take it off, and your arm's all withered.
Atrophied,
Completely atrophied. Well, you know all the words. Man, my mom's a wordsmith, Lori. I didn't know you were such a great wordsmith. No. Outstanding. You remind me of my mom.
Thanks.
I'm looking for a word. You got it right there. I love it.
Right there.
Oh, my gosh. You brought me my mom that way. My mom always chimes in. I'm trying to think of the word. My mom always gives me the perfect word.
I'm going to try to live up to mom's gift there.
I can tell you got that gift of being a wordsmith. But it's it was almost humorous that I spent all that time never wanting to miss a workout. The things I went to, not miss a workout. I could fly to Europe and have no sleep, but I'd land and drink coffee and go to the gym, and everybody else went to bed. I was so driven, and I couldn't miss a meal. Every 3 hours, the world had to stop for Lex Luger so I could have my chicken breast and protein and my meal every 3 hours, and or a protein shake or something. And a matter of, after 30 years of that, in a matter of months, all that muscle was gone.
The whole Isn't that amazing?
It's like, wow. Shows how fleeting when you put all your chips into something that can be transitional, whether it's another relationship with somebody else, your job, your finances, even your physical nature of being a bodybuilder / pro wrestler / footballer. When you're putting something that can any time for whatever reason could change, you really don't have, once again, a firm foundation that your life is based on.
Right. You've built everything on something outside of yourself, because even your body is outside of yourself. Right. You're outside of who you are. You're the very being of you. That's your inner world, and that's untouchable. It's invulnerable. But the body on out, that's your outer world. And when you build everything on that, you're right. I agree. It's not a firm foundation. And when all of those outer things get taken away from you, like they did with you for the most part, from Absolutely. Your body on out, you lost those physical abilities along with people that you loved and, you know, career opportunities, whatever, all gone. And then you had nothing to do but lay there, and all you had were your thoughts. All you had was yourself. That was a radical shift for you, obviously.
No doubt about it. Yeah.
So, God, there's so much good stuff here. I would. Well, and I say that, you know, not because I'm like the entertainment value of a good story, but I say that because there are so many people that go through either something similar to what you did or their own version of what you did. And they're not able to pull out of it. They don't recover, and they're not resilient. And so when I say there's so much good stuff here, because I know what's coming up as we continue to talk is going to be an answer for a lot of people that are searching. So that's what I mean. That's what I'm talking about. Before the accident where you couldn't move, before that, though, you know, let's talk a little bit about when you were starting to really, things were spiraling out of control. And probably, I guess, that culminated with the incident with Liz. Is that right? Do I have that close?
Timeline-wise, very close. I mean, things went on and got worse. A couple years after that, just when people thought, boy, if that's not his wake-up call. So everybody, believe it or not, predicted, I believe the time when people were placing bets on whether me or Scott Hall at the time were going to be the next ones that were going to be found literally dead in a hotel room somewhere.
Sure.
I was living in a hotel at the time.
Wow. And you were
all my stuff in storage. I was speaking in front of some people, and I told them how I lost my wife and my kids and my marriage and my house and all I lost. He goes, and the guy came up to me. Hey, I enjoyed hearing your story, but the guy set me straight. Thorough. He goes, he looked at me in the eye. He goes, Lex, you didn't lose him. He goes, you gave him up.
Ooh.
Out.
Bam.
Boy, was that true, right?
It is true.
I gave it up for drugs and alcohol and all those different things that I was trying to pacify myself to find what I couldn't figure out was missing in my search for completeness in all the wrong ways and all the wrong directions, all the wrong paths. So yeah, I gave them up. And those nearest dearest and the profound effect I had on others, including Elizabeth, who was a very sweet spirited girl. And she wanted to hang out with me and So she felt like, I mean, I should do what he does and take pills and drink alcohol. She was 110 pounds. I was 270 pounds. And the unfortunately, tragically, she overdosed and I didn't. And
yeah. So let's talk about that for a second. So for my audience and people that aren't and weren't wrestling fans, Liz was not only a friend of mine, but she was also in the wrestling business as an on-air character for many years, Miss Elizabeth. And ultimately her and Lex had a relationship. And this would have been, I guess, your secret life, right? Because you were married with a family. So
I was. When we met, Liz was married to a guy down in Miami, and I was married to my wife, Peggy, at the time. And the one thing I said, well, I used to see the guys that had a work-related relationship. I go, wow, why would you do that? Boy, I would never do that. Boom. It happened. It happened gradually over a period of years in the late 90s until we were in a full-blown extramarital affair, both of us. She left, her husband moved to Atlanta, and I literally had a east side, west side story going on. I would stay with my family over in Sugarloaf Country Club in Atlanta at night and sleep there. And I go over to the gym, work out, and hang out with Liz during the day because my gym was on the west side of Atlanta.
Right.
Almost a complete double life.
And how long did that go on?
Oh, wow. A few years.
Yeah. So we obviously, my husband and I, my family, we lived in Atlanta at the time as well. And, you know, we would all be in the gym often training together and or seeing you guys. And Liz was a friend and, you know, we did stuff together. And then we moved in 2000 to Arizona. And I don't remember the year, but not long after that, I got a call that Liz had died. Mm. What year was that, Lex?
04.
It was 04. So it was a few years.
Yeah.
And not going to lie, I was really pissed at you for a while.
You and Eric both, no doubt.
Just for a while, you know, because I was.
I mean, Lori, I still have massive, at times, hatred from Elizabeth fans on social media and stuff. And I get it. I understand. Yeah. I understand their feelings. And so, I definitely
understand. And, you know, and I think I know, because I'm a pretty deeply spiritual person myself. I do my work and I have been for almost 40 years. So I think that when, you know, when there's a loss, somebody that we care about, our first instinct or our first response is usually to look for who or what is to blame. Because we're mad and we're angry and we're upset and we're sad. And that loss, you know, is just like somebody's at fault here. And, you know, there's that energy that wants to find a place to land. So, you know, so of course was pretty pissed. But, you know, once the emotions calm down and you stop thinking only with emotions and you start to think with your head too, clearly it came around to the realization that Liz was an adult and she made adult decisions. And I think that, you know, the anger is that when you, even though she was an adult and people in that kind of situation are adults, but you get mad when you know that they are being influenced and you're like, but the other person, yeah, they didn't make them do anything. But when you know you have influence, that's where you're like, really, what, you know, you wish that person would have used that influence in a way that wasn't so harmful. All of that being said, you know, I don't have any of those feelings anymore because everything just, you know, things happen as they happen.
A lot of people who are like big Lex Luger fans, like want to let me off the hook completely. I'm like, well, no, they go, well, you didn't force her to take drugs. She made her own decision. And I go, yeah, but you know, Was I a contributing effect to that tragedy? I go, absolutely. I had a profound influence on her at the time. And mm-hmm. I go, so did I play a role and what happened and her death? I go, absolutely. So don't let me off so easy. once again, when we talked earlier, when you're making those kind of decisions, like, it doesn't affect just you. The lifestyle I was living greatly affected my family and Elizabeth and all those around me. And tragically, in her case, the ultimate tragedy.
Yeah. Yeah.
No doubt.
And I appreciate you. I appreciate you saying that. Don't let you off the hook. But honestly, you know, I feel like when anyone is going through whatever their stuff is, they're going through, and something that we consider a tragedy ensues. And in this case, you know, somebody ends up dying. I think that that is between, it's not my or anyone else's business to forgive or not forgive. That's for you. That's your business with your maker. That's you. So whether anybody else forgives or not, it's I don't think it's their business. I think that that's arrogant. And I think that that is only something that is between the person that has to deal with whatever part they played in whatever the situation is. That's for you. And everyone involved, you know, like the families or whoever, fans, friends, how they feel about it is between them and, you know, them and their God or them and their own mind, whatever. But I think that I just feel like it's your business, and you're the one that has had to reconcile that and do a lot of, I'm sure, your own soul searching to be able to come to a place where you could, you know, be who you've become now and be in a mental place to be able to help other people.
Yeah, the damage and regrets we can have from what happened in my life, early in my life, I had to work through a lot of unforgiveness to myself. Yeah. I knew God would forgive me, which I'm sure we'll talk about, but I had a lot of unforgiveness with myself.
Sure.
And the effects, profound effect I had on people, including Elizabeth. Mm-hmm. And I really, my one mentor said, well, you've been forgiven. God's forgiven you. He goes, now you got to forgive yourself, else you're going to be useless in your life moving forward, because mm-hmm. you're going to be hanging on to that.
Right.
Regret and unforgiveness, and unforgiveness when we hold on to it ourselves turns into bitterness, mm-hmm. and it really dramatically affects our life and where we can go from there.
It does. I think I've had that conversation a lot with clients going through their own things that they've had to come to terms with and feel like they've forgiven maybe other people for things, but there's still something in ourselves. We can be really, really hard on ourselves, which is not necessarily a bad thing as long as you can, you know, come to terms with it, own it, learn from it, and it makes you, you know, able to become a better version of yourself, a better human being. There's the gift. But if you don't forgive yourself, you can't get to that point. And then the opportunity is lost. And that lack of forgiveness, I think, really manifests itself in a lot of ways, either in the way that you behave toward other people, because really it's about you, but you're projecting out there, or it manifests itself in illness and disease, you know, bitterness, negativity, all manner of ways. So I think that that's really a core point that, you know, you've demonstrated that you went through, you know, and were part of some very, very serious things that altered not only your life, but the lives of other people. And you've had to do a lot of work to come through that. And a lot of that is forgiving yourself, which is not an easy thing, because, you know, for lesser things, we can hold ourselves accountable forever. And that's a pretty big thing. So I just, you know, I commend you for the work that you've done, because I know that that has not been easy. By any stretch.
I appreciate that, Lori. Thank you. I can't take all the credit, obviously. Obviously, the good Lord's helped me with all of that. But I find that if we don't, when people hold on to unforgiveness, whether inside themselves or towards others, it ends up affecting them more than the other person.
Right.
A lot of people don't, like I said, don't want to let you off the hook. And they have this unforgiveness towards you. Usually that ends up affecting them much more than the other person when you hold on to that. So it's definitely a, a big hurdle in a lot of people's lives. Like some people think, well, if I forgive so-and-so who, let's say, you know, there's a husband and wife and the one cheated on one or the other. And I love him or her and I want to forgive him or her, but I can't. And they feel like they're letting them off the hook.
Right.
If they forgive them. You may get divorced and move on, but they never let go of that unforgiveness. And it turns into a bitterness and affects their whole life and their demeanor and new people that they might meet. And
yes,
it's really remarkable. It's not that you're letting off the hook. You need to let go of the unforgiveness for yourself.
Yeah. Yes. Otherwise, you're a prisoner.
They don't care if some people, they don't care if you forgave them or not. They go on.
No.
Somebody has to have a reprobate mentality. And you go, well, he or she doesn't care if I forgive him. But you still can approach them sometimes if that's available. Mm-hmm. And at least release that for yourself, that you forgive them. You might not care, but I forgive you for what you did. And it allows you to move forward with your life and you don't hold on to that unforgiveness, whether they care or not. It's not that you're letting them off the hook.
Yeah.
You're doing it really for yourself and other people in your life now in the future. But there's a saying that the past is history. Tomorrow's a mystery. Today is the gift, right? I'm sure
yes.
You've heard that expression. So, but yeah, it's very applicable. A lot of people tell me the windshield is a lot bigger than the rearview mirror.
Right.
For a reason, right?
Yeah.
So I try to be a windshield guy in life now.
Yeah. Yeah. You're so right. I agree with that.
It doesn't mean those bad things didn't happen.
Right.
Or
that you condone it.
And make different decisions.
Right.
Absolutely.
But you became
with your life. Right. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that when you're so right about that, because when you don't forgive, that means there's a part of you that is still hanging on to it. That means there's a part of you that has still got an emotional investment in something that happened in the past. And that keeps you a bit of a prisoner back there.
A stumbling block in moving forward with your life.
Right. Right. You're breathing life into something that's gone. And you're keeping it alive if only in your own mind. And you're right. It becomes a block for moving forward positively, effectively.
Right. I know you work with people as a life coach, Lori. I'm dealing with these kind of things. And Nikita Koloff, a guy I wrestled with, and us, we have we call them man camps. And we work with men we work with wellness with the physical aspect, but also their emotional and spiritual issues. And man, when you see somebody comes clean with what's really the root of what's going on in their life, and it's usually unforgiveness or something, whether it was a parent when they were a kid or a girlfriend, boyfriend, husband, wife, man, when they finally realize that's what's really been the problem and they've been holding on to that, like we said, that unforgiveness in their life, and when they let go of that, you could actually almost see it come off of them. It's like you're carrying that big backpack around or a big log on their back.
Right.
You see that come off of them, and the change in the demeanor and the way they look, when you look them in the eyes, it's absolutely so awesome. It's so incredible to see and witness.
That's beautiful. That's an amazing thing. I love that you're doing that. I think that that's very cool. Before we sign off at the end of this, I want to make sure that you talk about where people can find out more about that, because I think it's a much needed thing. So let's talk about, all right, the whole thing with Liz happens, but that wasn't the end for you. You were still spiraling then. So take me from there to-
A stubborn man.
From there, right, to the act, to however this injury occurred. So I don't know even actually exactly how that happened. So get me there next.
More drugs, more alcohol, more drugs, more alcohol, more drugs, more alcohol. I'm so thankful to be on this podcast with you right now. I'm so thankful every day I wake up that God's given me a second chance, because so many of my colleagues didn't make it. I was in a hotel, living out of a hotel, put all my so-called stuff in storage and was living out of a hotel room for a year and a half. And I literally, I was up on, when Elizabeth passed, I was up on 17 felony counts for all the drugs and things they found in the house.
Ooh.
And I was on a 5-year probation. I kept on violating probation. They put me in out of jail, in and out of jail. My life completely spiraled out of control. Lost my driver's license. My life was a complete train wreck. And getting into 05. It's a miracle. I was serving my probation out. They wanted to make sure I didn't just get somebody to write it off for me. So a judge made me go down to the dog pound and clean dog and cat cages all day long. For my community service, I had like 500 hours of community service. I used to go down there for 12 hours a day, clean out cat and dog cages. And then I go back to hotel and just pop pills and drink. And I can't tell you how deep I'd go in. And it's such a miracle of God that I wasn't another victim of in my profession, or whether it's my profession or entertainment business.
Sure.
It's a miracle of God that I didn't know overdose probably so many times. And I had one particular occasion without, we don't have time for it on this, where I think I actually did overdose and I was pulled out of it by a light that came on. I was at the bottom of a dark pond and I was ready to give up and give in. I think I was at the point of an overdose, and I feel that I wasn't spiritual at all. Then I was agnostic, atheist, and there was a light I thought it was a dream on the bottom of this dark pond. I was in drowning, which was my biggest fear, right? Of how to die, not breathing, was drowning. I was in the bottom of a pond, and there was this little tiny white light, not shining in at the bottom of the pond, but I knew I couldn't get to the top for air, but there was this little bright white pinhole of light outside of all the darkness. If you think of that picture, that I felt like the Lord was showing me, don't give in, sit up. I felt like I was supposed to sit up towards that little white dot of light. I sat up and came out of it. My heart was pounding. I think I was actually physically going through an overdose. And
right.
I feel like God pulled me out of that.
Yeah, when I divine intervention there.
I didn't understand it because I had no relationship with God at that point. I was basically an atheist, agnostic, and at that point. Now, fast forward, I ended up back in and out of jail, violating my probation. I was going to go back to wrestling and train and make everything all right again by making a bunch more money and having the big comeback. I went to Canada for my big debut, got all back in shape, and I didn't realize I needed a judge's signature. Ended up getting deported from Canada. I was there illegally without a judge's permission. Extradited back to Atlanta. Spent 4 more months in jail.
Oh, God, Lex.
Yeah.
I did not know you spent that much time
in jail. Met a jail chaplain in jail. Who ended up searching me out when I got out of jail. He wanted me to train him, which I said, I'm not a personal trainer. But I didn't realize he was trying to develop a relationship with me. God placed him in my life. And that led to me a number of months later developing and a relationship with God and being saved on April 23rd of 06. And it was just totally a supernatural experience of how it happened.
Wow. So God
that led
had
to, thankfully, his... then, I, to bring you up to speed, I got radically saved, like Apostle Paul on road to Damascus when he was blinded and got saved and then fell off his horse. And a year and people loved me and poured into me and discipled me and taught me how to pray and read the Bible and apply it to its principles in my life. And a year later, I woke up in the hotel room paralyzed from neck down. Thank God, Sting, my very good friend Sting, who's also a believer and my brother in Christ, said that he believes that if I had that spinal cord injury prior to having my relationship I now have with the Lord, he goes, you would have offed yourself. You would have, he said, you might be right. Found a way to commit suicide or something.
You might be right. Yeah.
Because going back, I was so tied into the physical,
right,
who that was, that I probably wouldn't want to go on that way.
No, you wouldn't have had that.
In a wheelchair.
Yeah. You wouldn't have had that resource of God to
that foundation.
That foundation and that place to go, that's the lifeline, right? That's where you go when things are shaking and the house is crumbling.
There's a saying on Christ, the solid rock I stand, all else is shifting sand. I now had that rock, Christ meaning the rock, as my foundation. So even though I had a catastrophic spinal cord injury and was in a power chair for two years, and ended up becoming, by the grace of God, a functional quadriplegic where I can stand and live on my own. I was supposed to need 24-hour care, being fed, bathed, taken care of around the clock the rest of my life. And I can now live totally independently. I can stand and walk some and drive a regular car. And I'm so thankful, Lori, for the amount of healing God's done in my body, which I'm like in a 1% category. Shepherd Center, a world-class spinal cord injury rehab center. I'm one of their miracles. I'm one of their 1%ers that had a spinal cord, a high cervical spinal cord like mine, have as much neurological function as I have. So,
amazing. It is amazing. So there wasn't like a particular incident in real time that caused this injury. This was something that was probably brewing from all of your years in being an athlete, especially wrestling, because you know people don't realize, I think, that how much of abuse the body takes when you're a wrestler.
That's what I thought, but the top neurologist on the planet are at Shepherd Center in Atlanta, and they said, well, no, we saw some damage in there, but to go nothing that would have led to this. He goes, we put you in a category of transverse myelitis. He goes, a lot of people get that. It's not common, but he goes, a lot of people never did sports. Sustained the same type of injury that you have. He goes, it might've had something to do with your football and wrestling career. May not have. I'm like, wow. Hmm. I thought like everybody else, for sure, it must've been they go, we didn't see anything that was indicative. You had what we expected to see for somebody was a football player, wrestler, but nothing that would have caused that type of.
So you just woke up. You just woke up one day in that state.
And of course, in a hotel room on the West Coast. I was living in Atlanta, in San Francisco, in a hotel room with the door bolted shut. They had to knock the door down. I always did everything with pizzazz, Lori. So what a scene. DDP was there. He was in the room. I thought I was dehydrated. I felt like a suction cup, a giant horseshoe. And I was like in a metal suit, pulling me through the bed. I couldn't move anything but my head and shoulders. And I thought I was maybe dehydrated. I'd never been paralyzed before. So I was, right. I didn't know what paralysis felt like. So yeah, it was scary. But even in that hotel room, Lori, I'll tell you, the good Lord, I was laying there and I tried to get to a phone with my head and hit it with my big German schnoz. I tried to get help. And I fell off. I rolled off the bed.
Oh my God.
Now my neck was against the nightstand like this. And when you have a spinal cord injury, cervical, your breathing is restricted. Now I'm going to suffocate. I panicked, which made it worse. And all of a sudden, into the room, I felt literally the presence of God and a verse in the Bible. I didn't think I had any verses memorized. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not upon your understanding. Acknowledge him in all his ways, and he'll direct your path.
Okay, we're going to take a pause here. That's all the time we have today. So make sure that you come back next week for part two with Lex Luger. And give this a real deep, some deep thought, you guys, because there's a lot of good stuff here that I think is going to have such a big impact on your life. So we're going to wrap it up. Stay feisty, my friends. Come back next week. And go make some epic shift happen in your lives. You too, Gary Vee.